Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it is January 25th. And let's see, this is our second lecture so far. Okay, I sent some emails out to everybody saying where they could find the lectures. You recall I'm recording the lectures. There's one section that I wasn't able to get to for whatever reason. That's 23232, and you probably didn't get the email. So if you're in that section, which is today at 3, you probably didn't get the email, but it's in the syllabus. The link to those lectures are in the syllabus in case you want to go and listen to them, or better yet, download them. How would you download a file to your computer? Right-click, yeah, right-click, and then save target as or save link as or something like that, depending on what operating system you are using. Okay, so we're going to finish up one and go into chapter 2, and what I want to see is everybody's homework. Hold your homework up. Yeah, look at that, far out. Oh, you guys don't even need a lecture now. That's fantastic. But we'll do it anyway, just for fun. Okay, excellent. So that's how you want to get through this class. I think you just have to study a little bit every day. All right, if you want to get good at anything, guess how you get good at it? Doing it every day. Right, if it's a language, right, playing a musical instrument or whatever, you just do it every day and it becomes part of your life. Okay. So here is the sign-in sheet, sign for Monday, and then pass it around. There's a lot of students in class, so make sure you find it quick. All right, it's all alphabetized, so you should find your name, and make sure everybody signs it, because that's your receipt that you were in class, right? So if by accident, or if I drop you, which I don't think is by accident, and you say, but I was in class, and I said, no, you weren't, and I don't know anybody in here. Right, then you could say, well, let's see the sign-in sheet. And if you signed in, well then, right, then you were in class. So make sure you sign in. That's how I know for sure. All right, here's some other information about SI. The room number, so it's today at 1:30. Right, and I didn't put the...
Wednesday.
Oh, okay, so Wednesday is the first session. But from then after, it'll be Monday and Wednesday. Okay, good, thank you. Okay, let's see. In Blackboard, don't forget, you do have online quizzes to do every single week. What day do you have to do them by?
Tuesday.
The deadline is Tuesday by 11 p.m., so everybody has to submit a quiz by tomorrow night at 11 p.m. over the first chapter. And let's see, let me just, this is how you find it. Weekly assignments, we're going to be looking at week number 1 right here. Okay, so what's something good to study for the weekly quizzes? Here are the different modules. These questions right here that you can practice as many times as you want. All right, so I'm going to pull some of these questions off and put it in your quiz, which some of you probably have taken already. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, try hitting control and a minus sign, and that might minimize the web page enough to where that line will show up. Okay, that's the only suggestion I have. Or what browser were you using? Do you remember? IE or Firefox? Yeah, you might want to try Firefox and see what happens. Okay, so I know there's a lot of funky stuff still on the internet, but try, if you get hung up, you can't see something, try hitting control minus, that shrinks the text. You know, if you hit control plus, that makes everything get bigger. So if you're looking at a figure and it's too small to see, hit control plus and it will blow it up. It can be as big as, some of them work that way. Not all figures you can blow up, but most do. Okay, so try those two things. All right, so here's your quiz. So those of you that are even adding today, all right, you got to get that quiz done by tomorrow at 11 p.m. And as you go from one question to the next, what should you do?
Enter,
right? Don't click the save button. All right, couple quick things for people that are just adding the class. Here's the welcome letter. Make sure you're familiar with that. That was under course information. Here's the course syllabus. You should be familiar with that. And you even have a free quiz to take covering this course syllabus, so you can check your internet connection, that if your computer is working, that you know something about Blackboard on how to take a quiz. Okay, so you can practice taking a quiz. And then here are some things you can use to check your internet connection, and people have been doing pretty good with that information. All right, something else about the weekly assignments. All right, so that's what it looks like. Page 2 right here, these are just labeling exercises. And look in the blueprint right here. You do not need to submit assignment to instructor. Okay, I've been getting a lot of emails from a lot of websites sending me information that a student has completed an exercise. And if a web page is saying you don't need to submit it to an instructor, please don't email it to me. All right, because my email inbox is getting filled up. So all you do is practice it, and you can go back and practice it again and again and again. How do you know which ones are for course points? Okay, here's an animation. Maybe we'll look at it in a little bit. You don't get course points for that. Okay, here's another reference that you can go and study. There's good labeling exercises. And all of these quizzes right here, should you submit these to your instructor? No, please don't submit them to me. Right, I'll go nuts in my email inbox if I get from everybody. Now, what about this? Is this something you have to do?
Yeah.
And how do you know, even without reading it? The dollar sign is there. This is the assignment that you get course points for. Okay, so you would just click on this link, and once you click on this link, how many minutes do you get?
10 minutes.
Can you go back to a previous question?
No,
you can't. Okay. And so you have to finish it once you start it as well, okay? Just like the forever quizzes that were, all right, notice how you can just mouse around right here. These forever quizzes, you can take them as many times as you want. Your highest grade is going to be stored, but these are set up just like the regular quizzes to where you can't go back. Once you start it, you got to finish it, otherwise it's going to hang the program up. A number of people ran over 10 minutes on these, and you see an exclamation point. That means that you got to get your quiz-taking skills down pat for the real quiz. Remember, because if you go over 10 minutes on a real quiz, you get dinged, a point per minute. Right? But that's okay. You got a timer on the screen that you can pay attention to. And if you don't finish it, that hangs the program up as well. All right? So practice on these. Practice with these right here for your quiz-taking skills. All right. So how do you get into this class? There's still some people that want to add the class. You have to go to lab, talk to the lab instructor, and if there are no-shows, because today is the first day of lab class for three labs in this class, if there are no-shows, they'll be dropped, and then a lottery will be held to replace them. And in my noon class, I already have two spots available, right? So I'm going to have a lottery for at least two spots, maybe even some more if there are no-shows. And I'm not so sure about the 3 o'clock. There's also a 3 o'clock class, so you can hopefully find a way into those classes if need be. Okay. The other warning that I have is notice that a number of weeks are enabled in Blackboard. So if you want to proceed a little bit quickly, have a lot of time to review for an exam, do you think, is that a good thing to do? Yeah, that's really great, right? So if you want to move ahead in the course, you're welcome to do that, but just remember, right? Don't just jump to week number 2 or 3 without completing week number 1 first. And you can check your progress by going into your grade book and seeing what quizzes you've actually completed. Okay, so there's some inherent checks with that. All right, and then soon I'll enable some more modules. All right. So, anybody have any questions so far? No? Don't go over 10 minutes. First quiz is due tomorrow. Yes? The grade book is under tools. And since I'm in an instructor page right now, you would click that in my grades. But since I don't get grades, if I click that, it would just say error. But for you, it's going to take you to your grade book. Okay? Okay. There's some little programming in the grade book that I haven't figured out yet. So maybe somebody's noticed. And that is those two forever quizzes are extra credit. But I haven't figured out how to make them extra credit in the grade book yet. So your points show up, it just hasn't been added to your total. So I'll be working on that soon. Okay, any other questions? Yeah.
I tried one of the fiberglasses.
Yeah.
And it went in and it said, like, contact the main something on it when I tried to run it from a work computer.
Okay. How many times had you tried it?
Three times.
Okay. Sometimes it will hang up if you start even the forever quiz. If you start a forever quiz but don't finish it, it will hang up.
Well, it did it when I was doing the link to run the test. So
yeah.
It went down
okay.
To the test, and it was the page that you link it to that.
Okay. Maybe because you didn't fit. I'll go, if you can see me after class, I can check it out. But if you take even a forever quiz and you don't complete it, it might not let you back in the next time. So you got to go through all the questions.
But what about the link, though?
Yeah, Blackboard is smart enough to know that if you didn't complete a quiz, it won't let you in.
Oh,
you're saying the link to speed test isn't working. No. That's just, like this one right here. It might be, if it was a work computer, maybe they do block certain kinds of ActiveX files that are necessary to run the speed test. Yeah, okay. That should, I don't think that has anything to do with Blackboard. Did it? Try it at home.
Okay.
Just try it at home. I know some of you might be working in a clinical setting and you have computers at work and it has patient data in those computers. And you can never give patient data away on the internet. That's a huge fine. They can put you out of business for doing that. So if you're working in some kind of clinical office someplace, they maybe restrict access to the internet in certain circumstances to protect what? Patient confidentiality. So that might be a problem with this thing. Okay, but this, it might not be loading that particular file. Okay? Okay. I think that's enough yakking for me, but any other questions? Okay. Yeah, so I believe all these links are working. Yeah, this link is working as well. Okay. But it would be nice to know what your work availability is. You know, using these tests right here, that would be fun to know how it goes. Okay. So a couple things yet that we need to talk about in chapter one are some body planes. All right, and there are three planes that define space for us. Okay, so for instance, I have a hat right here on a table. How could you mathematically describe where that hat is in the room? There are three things you got to be able to describe. How do you know it's not over there or over here? You have to tell me how far away it is from one wall in the right to left dimension, right? But how do you know it's not on the ceiling? You have to tell me how far away it is from the ceiling or how far away from the floor. So there's right, left. There's up and down. And what else would you have to tell me?
Front and back.
Yeah, front and back. Right? So there's three dimensions in space to completely characterize things. So we can image the body. If we want a plane through the body, there are three planes. And the first plane can move either right or left. Right? We call this a sagittal plane. If it's right smack in the middle, we call that mid-sagittal. If it's off midline, we call that parasagittal. And I have a click or drag and drop exercise in Blackboard, right? So you can like click on this. This would be the mid-sagittal plane. That's a special condition of a sagittal plane. So you could have a sagittal plane that just cuts your right arm off. You have your whole body over here and your right arm over there, and you're looking at maybe a shoulder or something. That would be a parasagittal or sagittal plane. Okay, a transverse plane is going to separate a person's body from a superior part and an inferior part. And again, that's going to be very much different. The top part is going to be a lot different than the bottom part, depending on where that plane goes through the body. All right, so here we can see a plane right through the thoracic cavity. And then last is the frontal plane or coronal plane. So that's a plane that could maybe chop the tip of your nose off and separate it from the rest of your body. Or it could move anterior or posterior. So good ways to think of this is the sagittal separates your body into right and left parts, And if it's right smack in the middle, it's probably going to almost be exactly equal right and left parts. The transverse plane is going to separate your body into a superior and inferior part. And a coronal is going to separate your body into an anterior or posterior. And guess what? You got to know another name for anterior. What's another name for anterior? That would be ventral. And another name for posterior is dorsal. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's a little confusing sometimes. Okay. All right. So let's see. What else do we want to look at? Oh, oblique. Sometimes we want to image the body not along those planes that are perpendicular to each other, but maybe at an angle. And a really good example of that is your heart. Because you probably all know that your heart is not smack in the middle of your body. Where is it mostly? It's mostly on the left. It starts off on the right, but then it moves over to the left. It is angulated, and as it moves over to the left, it's also kind of sticking outside your body. So there are a lot of angles to the heart. If we want a really good, pretty picture of the heart, that imaging study has to be angulated so that we can see it. And that's what we would call an oblique plane. If it's angled off the sagittal, angled off the transverse, angled off the frontal or coronal plane, that would be an oblique. Okay, body regions. You got some good figures to practice all your different body regions. Pretty much you know what the head is. Let's go over some of these things. Head is what? Everything superior to the neck, right? Your neck is between your shoulders and your head. Sometimes we call that a cervical region. All right, your trunk has got appendages coming off of it. Your trunk has your thorax and your abdomen underneath it. There's something that separates the abdomen from the thorax, a really good organ that separates the two. Anybody been mousing around? Look, that would be the diaphragm that's necessary for breathing. Okay, and then the pelvis is a cavity below the abdomen, and it contains pelvic organs, right? Like ovaries, uterus, some parts of your intestine. All right, now this is what I want to bring to your attention, limbs. We have two upper limbs, two lower limbs. Okay, and the limbs have some subdivisions. So we always like to subdivide things. So here is my right upper limb. And between my shoulder and my elbow right here, okay, we're going to call that the arm. Okay, between my elbow and my wrist, can we call that the arm? No, that would be inappropriate because that's really your forearm. So anatomic language is very particular and specific, and we want to make sure you know the difference between your arm and your forearm. Same thing for your lower appendage. Okay, between your hip and your knee, does that look like somebody's leg? No, it's not. Not in terms of anatomy. That's really what we call your thigh. So thighs between hip and knee, and between your knee and your ankle, guess what? That's your leg. So those are some good definitions for you to know. What are some other things that are going to be important for you? Ah, this diagram right here. You should become familiar with these, and you have some really nice drag and drop exercises in Blackboard. All right, so the area pertaining to the eyes is the orbital or eye region. There's a region associated with the ear, maybe it's on the other one. Let's see, another slide. That would be the otic region. Otic refers to the ear. Optic refers to the eye. And oral refers to the mouth right here. Okay. Pectoral region, sternal region, right? Inguinal region. And what the heck is a finger? Anybody? I don't think anybody really has gotten that far yet. But a finger and a toe is a digit, right? So these are all digits, which is different than your hand, right? So that way we call these. That's why we call these the digital region right here. And one of the digits, namely the thumb, that's the pollex, and the big toe is the hallux. So it would really be good for you to learn all of these things. Armpit is axillary. So you have a number of good exercises in Blackboard. And I tell you what, there's another really good exercise that you can do. I think this is an exam figure, so you have a blank copy of this figure. Of course, practice labeling it. But even a better thing to do maybe is to start with a blank piece of paper and draw it. Just draw it out from memory, right? Just draw a little person and then start labeling these things and then compare the two. And you'll see, I forgot this region right here, the hip region, the coxal region. And guess what? You probably won't forget that one again, right? So start with drawing and then move to the drag and drop. And then finally those exam figures. That would be really, really helpful for you. Okay, last thing, almost the last thing in this chapter are some cavities. We maybe talked about cavities a little bit already. Okay, you got some good, really good activities in Blackboard. Okay, so what good is a cavity inside your body? Yeah, what good are cavities inside your body? Well, they hold things, okay? Like your brain. And that's a good organ to have, right? Your brain that's in the cavity inside your head. So let's talk about some cavities because they hold very important regions and organs. All right, so here we have a figure. Let's see if we can make it bigger. How do you think we could make it bigger? Control plus? Ah, it's not working. Okay, it doesn't work on this figure. Too bad. Okay. Well, I see a couple colors right here. I didn't tell anybody this the first time, but I'm colorblind. So a lot of these colors I don't see. All right? So sometimes I just might ask you in class, like, what is this color right here? That looks green to me or yellow or something. Yellow. Okay. So just tell me. Don't look like I'm trying to trick you. It's just I don't know. All right? All right. So there's two main colors on this diagram, and I kind of know it because I've looked at this slide before, so here, but I get this one confused, right? Okay, so we got yellow, and what else we got? Red. Those are two main body cavities, all right? So those are the two main ones, and the yellow is posterior, so we call that the dorsal body cavity, and the red ones are anterior, so we call that the ventral body cavity. Furthermore, cavities can be broken down into subcavities. So this dorsal cavity can be broken down into the cranial cavity and vertebral cavity. Cranial cavity holds the brain, vertebral cavity holds the spinal cord. And as far as these ventral cavities right here, okay, the thoracic cavity, superior to the diaphragm, that's what this little line right here represents, right? You can practice all of these things. Diaphragm, nice. Probably heard a little yippee or something come over the speakers. All right, here's the thoracic cavity. Another subdivision of the ventral body cavity is the abdominal. And then another subdivision would be the pelvic cavity. Okay, and just like the ventral cavity can be subdivided into cavities, so can the thoracic cavity. So let's look at the thoracic cavity. Here's a diaphragm right here. We see here is a cavity for the heart. So guess what we call that? The pericardial. Anytime you hear cardiac or cardial or myocardial, you should think of the heart. So this is the cavity that the heart is in. So the pericardial cavity is inside what cavity? The thoracic cavity. It's also inside the ventral body cavity. Okay, so don't forget, we can subdivide these things. The lungs are in the thoracic cavity, which also is in the ventral cavity, but it's not in the pericardial cavity. It's in the pleural cavity, right? So you got the right and left pleural cavities right here that hold the lungs in particular. And then this whole region right here, including the heart, and this cavity above it, all right, that one is called the mediastinum. Mediastinum. That's a cavity. And that's a very important cavity because there are big, huge blood vessels that come off the heart. And sometimes when somebody's born, they're born with a blue color to them. That means that they're not breathing properly or that their heart isn't functioning properly. Anybody know what that condition is called when you have kind of a blue cast to your lips instead of being pink or kind of blue? That's a cyanotic condition. That's respiratory distress or cardiovascular distress. And sometimes when somebody has a congenital abnormality of the heart, they have that sign. And then, of course, you want to get some imaging studies right away to figure out what's wrong because that baby could die right away. and you order mediastinal scans, right? So mediastinum is a really good word for you to know, okay? Mediastinum. All right, so don't forget, you have these major cavities and subdivisions, and you should know which ones fit inside each other. And if this is pretty confusing, guess what you should do? All right, like here I have pericardial. Where should that go? I don't know if I see where it goes. It should go right in here somewhere. Where's the line? Yeah, I don't like where that line is going. This line should go where? To here. Aha. Cranial cavity. Hopefully they got that line right. Oh, good. Okay. So see, right now it looks like it's pointing to the lung. It should go over here. Left lung. And guess what? This probably is left lung and this is maybe right lung. Somebody forgot to... Oh, they don't have lungs. Pleural cavity. Beats me. Oh, here.
No.
I don't see the line. Look. That's thoracic. Okay, so if this line... Oh, they forgot to justify these lines. These lines should be here. And this should be here, and that line should be there. Unless it's just showing up like that on my computer. I didn't look. It's like that on everybody's. Okay, welcome to the world of computers. Okay. All right, so know all your cavities. There's one other cavity. And this is important for terminology's sake. Okay. What can you tell me about the abdominal and pelvic cavity? Let me go to this figure right here. Okay. There is nothing that really separates the pelvic cavity from the abdominal cavity like from the thoracic cavity and abdominal cavity. You got the diaphragm right there, right? So this is just a construct that we used in our minds to separate these different organs out. But this is basically one big, huge cavity, which is the abdominal and pelvic cavity. So a lot of times, we're interested in talking about the whole big cavity, not just the abdominal or pelvic. And so, in anatomy, we can take two structures and join them together so that people know that we're talking about both structures at the same time, and we can make a word out of it. But when we do, we have to put an O between them. Like abdominal pelvic cavity, means both of them put together. All right, so maybe you were thinking I was saying abdominal pelvic cavity, but that's not it. It's abdominal. All right, so on practical tests or whatever, you can take two anatomical words. If there's some kind of relationship to these two structures and you want to combine these words, put an O between them. And do we have that on the slide anywhere? Abdominal pelvic cavity? Ah, right here. See that? Abdominal pelvic. That's different than abdominal pelvic. All right, one other thing. The abdominal pelvic cavity goes by another name as well. Sometimes we call that the peritoneal cavity, right, or peritoneum. And here we got peritoneal cavity is what? The abdominal pelvic cavity. Two of those put together, subdivisions of the ventral body cavity. That's another one that you should know. So that's something that happens in anatomy all the time. There will be one structure and it will have different names. And you just should become familiar with all the different names that are commonly used. And on a practicum, for instance, if somebody asks you the name of something, you don't have to put all the words down that you know. Just pick one that you know is correct. All right, on a practicum, for instance, and you should get 100% credit for that. And if the instructor hasn't heard of that particular term, show them a reference someplace, but maybe not one of the websites that you designed and put on the internet, right? A good, reputable resource, like a textbook or something, and you should get 100% credit for that. Okay, so some things, some structures will have more than one name. And guess what? You all have more than one name, too, that people use at various times. Right? Depending. You might have a nickname, first name, second name. All right? And I have different names at different times, too. Like, for instance, what would somebody call me? Like Honey, for instance. All right? So you just have to know by context how to use these terms properly. Okay. Membrane. Let's talk about some membranes for just a little bit. So membranes are something that line a cavity. And have we looked at some cavities already? Like, name a cavity. Like pericardial cavity. That's right. A serous membrane is a membrane that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world. Like the pericardial cavity, the pleural cavity, the peritoneal cavity, which is what? Abdominal and pelvic cavity put together. Okay, so it's a special kind of membrane system, and it's got three parts to it. These are the three parts. The part of the membrane that's touching the organ itself is what we call the visceral division. Then it also is going to touch the wall of the cavity, which is not going to touch the organ itself, but it's going to touch the wall of the cavity. We call that the parietal division. And then there's something that separates these two membranes. It's fluid. We call that serous fluid. All right, so that is, and so that could be called the serous cavity. All right, so let's think. What were some cavities? Pericardial cavity. The part of this membrane that is touching the heart is called what? The visceral pericardium. The part of that membrane that is touching the cavity that suspends the heart is called the parietal pericardium. And the same thing for the pleural membranes. All right, so you have a pretty good illustration of this in your books. All right, so think of maybe a balloon that we have right here, and somebody just poked their hand inside the balloon. All right, so here we see the outer wall of the balloon right here, and then the inner wall, it's continuous, right? But here's the inner wall touching your hand, and then you have a space between the inner membrane and the outer membrane, and that's what contains the serous fluid. So the part that's touching the hand right here is called the visceral division. The part that is going to be on the wall of the cavity is the parietal division, and the stuff in between is what we call serous fluid in the serous cavity. Okay, so let's apply this to the heart. So here's the heart that's been stuck like inside of a balloon, and we can see these two layers. Here's the layer that's right on the surface of the heart. What would we call that? The visceral pericardium. Here is the part that is touching the cavity that the heart is suspended in. So this would be the parietal pericardium, and the space between the two contains serous fluid, and we call that the serous fluid in there. Okay, so that's for the pericardium. And these spaces can become infected, right? And they can swell up. And that's really bad in terms of the heart, right? Because as this pericardial space fills up, it compresses the heart. And what is the heart supposed to do for you? Pump blood. So that means in order for the heart to pump blood, guess what has to happen when the heart is relaxing? Blood has to flow into it so that it can be pumped out. But if the serous fluid is compressing the heart, blood can't flow back into it, so that when the heart does contract, it's not pumping any blood. So how would that be if you have a heart that's not pumping very much blood? That would be terrible, right? Because you could die as a result of that, right? We'd call that pericardial effusion. So these spaces are real important to become familiar with and how to talk about them. So here is a serous membrane. Because the lungs, the outside of the lungs, aren't open to the outside world. The inside of the lungs are open to the outside world, but not the outside. All right, so here we see two divisions of that membrane, actually all three divisions. The division that's right on the surface of the lungs, we call that that's the visceral pleural membrane, or pleura, because pleura has to do with the lungs. This part right here on the pleural cavity, that would be the parietal pleura, and then you have pleural fluid, pleural serous fluid in between right here. And that space can become inflamed as well. Anybody know what that condition is called? Okay, I'll give you a hint. The condition where the pericardial membranes get infected, we call that pericarditis, surrounding the heart. the inflammation that involves the pleural membranes right here is called pleurisy. Pleurisy, maybe somebody's had that in here. Okay. And that's really painful because whenever you start to breathe, these membranes have to stretch, and that feels like somebody's stabbing you in the chest with a knife. All right, so that makes you really miserable. So what's your alternative to not feeling like you're being stabbed in the chest? You don't breathe. You hold your breath. Well, how long can you hold your breath for without feeling miserable? About 20 seconds. So you have a really terrible choice to make. Feel like you're choking or not breathing or being stabbed in the chest. So you can imagine how a patient is in that circumstance. They're miserable. How would you treat somebody with that kind of intractable pain? Opiates. Okay, and that allows them to breathe. They don't feel the pain. Okay, so there are certainly appropriate conditions for using opiates in the hospital to treat that kind of pain. And then, of course, you want to fight the infection, like using antibiotics. All right, so medicine is very interested in all these different layers around different organs because that's how we treat patients. Okay, the last cavity is the abdominopelvic cavity. It goes by number of names. The peritoneum or peritoneal cavity is another one. So here is the peritoneum right here. Here is a division that's right on an organ inside the peritoneal cavity. So that would be the visceral peritoneum. And here's the division right on the body cavity wall. So that would be the parietal peritoneum. And in between the two would be serous fluid. Okay? And if somebody gets an infection in this space, what do we call that? It has to do with peritoneum. That's called peritonitis. For instance, if somebody has a ruptured appendix and all that infected material gets into the peritoneal cavity, you'll be really sick. Okay, that would be a peritonitis, for instance. You'll probably live through it, but you might not feel like it. Okay. All right, so those are some membranes. We're going to look at other membranes, but this is just one kind of serous membrane. All right, let me just go look at my notes. I think that's all I want to talk about in this one. Okay, so how are you guys doing with chapter one? Hopefully pretty good. Want to save these changes? Okay, maybe. All right, so don't forget, in the exam study guide, you've got the figures in one that you can start practice labeling. In Blackboard, you got the interactive exercises you can start practice labeling. And just do a little bit every day. So how would you figure out your study schedule? I gave you a little aid. The weekly study plan, right? Success is not an accident, right? So read over that to get you started. Okay, so let's move on to chapter two. Okay, so chapter one is just kind of an orientation. Chapter two is now where we're going to start to study some small things because we're going to start with small things and move up to bigger structures. All right, so this is microscopic anatomy, and in particular, the first topic is going to be cytology, studying a cell. Cytology is the study of cells. All right, so before I go on, I want to ask and see where the sign-in sheet is. Where's that sign-in sheet at? It's moving around? All right, making good progress. Thank you. When it gets to the back, just send it back down to the front of the room. All right, so the cell is the basic unit of life. As a matter of fact, I might consider that the structural and functional unit of life. Right, because there's always going to be a relationship between structure and function. So we're going to start out by looking at some cells. Okay, and a cell has got to contain a couple of materials. It's got to contain genetic material as well as cytoplasm. All right, so all life has these two materials surrounded by some kind of membrane that separates it from the outside world. So the cells that make up our body are alive because it contains chromosomes inside the nucleus and cytoplasm. Bacteria are alive because it has a chromosome that's just floating around inside the cytoplasm. It doesn't have a nucleus, but it has living processes taking place in cytoplasm. That's the fluid part inside the cell. Okay. But a virus, on the other hand, it has genetic information. It can pass information on to the future generations of a virus, but it does not have cytoplasm, which is really pretty interesting. So a bacteria is life. What about a virus? Is a virus alive if it doesn't have cytoplasm? Could you use your understanding of life to say a virus is alive? People are shaking their head no. That is really good. Okay. So that just means that it's relatively easy to treat bacterial infections because it's a living system, right? And that means you can kill it with certain kinds of things. But in terms of a viral infection, these are really difficult kinds of infections to treat because can you kill anything that's not alive? Absolutely not, right? So there are very few antiviral agents, much more difficult to treat because it's just not a living entity, right? So you got to have a cell in order for something to be alive. And humans have trillions of cells, and so we're multicellular. There are some organisms that are just made up of one cell. Anybody have an example of an organism that's just made up of one cell? You have to take a biology class. We don't talk about that in here very much. But like a paramecium, okay, would be a really good example, or an amoeba, or even a bacteria is a unicellular organism. All right, so in order to understand a cell, which still, right now, even though it's small, is pretty complicated. All right, so how do we want to start studying something that's complicated? Break it down into pieces, right? And so the kinds of cells that we're interested in, human mammalian cells, have smaller building blocks that make up a cell, and these are what we call organelles. So we're going to start looking at the building blocks of a cell. Oh, and I could ask you, what's the building block of life? A cell. Right, so use that term in your understanding of things, that term building block. Okay, so let's look at some of the building blocks that make up a cell. The first thing is the cell membrane, and another name, here we go, here's a structure that has a couple names already, is the plasma membrane. Plasma because it's very fluid. It can move around very easily. It separates the extracellular substances, which means stuff that's outside the cell, from the intracellular substances. So these extracellular substances are not alive, but the intracellular substances are. So it's a kind of a magic membrane that separates living processes from non-living processes. Okay. So let's go to this diagram right here. Here's a picture of a cell. Right, if I want to make it bigger, I have to hit the plus sign right here. So here's a cell. The plasma membrane separates the inside of the cell from the outside. The inside of the cell has organelles, and it has fluid between the organelles. That's what we call cytosol. Cytosol is the fluid, and if we put organelles and cytosol together, then that's what we call cytoplasm. Right, so cytoplasm are organelles plus cytosol. So for the test, you'll have to be able to know what the name of all these different organelles are, plus their function. So I'm going to talk about all of those things. The first organelle is the plasma membrane. So it separates the inside and outside world. It also allows things, special things, to enter the cell that promotes the life of the cell. And it also secretes things that are produced by the cell, right, and they leave by exocytosis right here. Okay. The cell membrane kind of looks like this. So it looks kind of complicated. The basic building block of a cell membrane is a chemical compound we call a phospholipid. These little balls right here represent the phosphate molecules, and the inside of the plasma membrane are lipids. These little legs or tails right here. So our basic understanding of a cell membrane is a phospholipid. Oh, I tell you what, let me ask you a question. How many layers does it look like right here? There's two layers, right? Because a phospholipid is a building block, but there's one over here. So sometimes we think of a cell membrane as being a phospholipid bilayer. That's the simplest and best way to talk about a membrane. Okay, so These lipids right here are like oils. Okay, and what you tell me, if you have some oil and you put a drop of oil on a surface of water, maybe it could be a glass of water, maybe it could be some water in the sink or on a pond or something, what would happen to that oil that you drop on water? Is it going to dissolve into it? No, it's always going to stay separated. Okay, and that's because oil and water have different natures associated with them. Okay, so now you have that oil layer floating on top of the water, and if you were to jiggle the water, what would happen to that oil layer? Would it fracture and break like ice? Or how would it move on the surface of the water? It's very fluid, right? That oil film is very, very fluid. Well, cell membranes are very fluid as well because they're made up of this oily component right here. So, in order to make membranes strong enough so that when you stand up, all your membranes just don't drip down on the floor, they have to have some structure, there are cholesterol molecules that are put into the membrane to give membranes some rigidity so that they're pretty strong. Okay, so here's cholesterol. So you can see cholesterol has a very important function in your body, makes membranes strong, and you know if you have too much cholesterol, it's bad for you. You got to have what? The right amount inside your body. And cholesterol is a lipid, so it likes to dissolve in the interior part of the membrane right here. There are other proteins associated with the membrane. Okay, so here are some proteins. So this one right here looks like a channel going through the membrane. So this is the way that certain things can move from inside to outside. And some of these channels can have gates associated with them. So sometimes this channel is open, sometimes this channel is closed to allow transport one way or the other. Other kinds of proteins that are dissolved in the membrane can act as enzymes. They can convert one kind of chemical compound to another chemical compound. Right, so there are enzymes in the membrane. Other kinds of proteins might act as receptors. They might act as like little mailboxes where certain signaling molecules can attach to change the function of the cell on the inside. So we've got channels, we've got enzymes, we've got receptors. And then on some proteins, it can be modified by these little sugar molecules. Each one of these things that looks like a stop sign right here is a sugar molecule. And this sugar molecule, is it just a straight line? Or what can you tell me about these? Yeah, it has branches. It has a certain pattern associated with it. So anytime you see this word glyco, you should think of a sugar molecule. So here is a sugar with a protein. We would call that a glycoprotein. Here is a sugar molecule associated with a lipid. That would be a glycolipid. Well, these branching patterns are very specific. And as a matter of fact, each one of us in here has a specific pattern to these branches made up of these sugar molecules. And that's how your body knows what cells belong to you and what cells might be from outside your body, because the branching pattern of these glycoproteins and glycolipids will be different from different organisms. Now, your brothers and sisters, the branching pattern is going to be very similar. But when you move outside your family, the branching pattern is different. And when you go to a different species, the branching pattern is even more different. Okay? And so when somebody looks to see if maybe they need an organ, a transplant, a heart or something, they look at the branching pattern of these things right here to see what kind of organs might be most compatible with the recipient. And so these things right here we call antigens. So antigens will identify cells as being belonging to your body or belonging to something from outside you. All right, so that's how your body can tell something about these cells. Okay. The membranes also have these filaments right here. Certain cells will have a particular shape. Some are going to be spherical. Some are going to be flat. Some will be columnar or square. And some can even be shapeshifters. Right? They can change their shape when they move around inside your body. And they do that by pulling and pushing on these filamentous parts of the cytoskeleton, which are associated with the membrane. Okay, so an integral protein is one that it's embedded in the membrane. A peripheral protein is a protein that might be associated with the membrane, but it's not really an integral part of it. It doesn't really go into the membrane. Another good definition for integral protein is that if you pull on this integral protein and grab it and pull it out so you can study it scientifically, it means that you destroy the membrane because you have to pull the membrane apart to get at it. That's an integral protein. Other kinds of proteins that you can grab and pull away from the membrane and you don't destroy the membrane, those are what we call peripheral proteins. All right, so the basic understanding of a membrane is the phospholipid bilayer, which is very fluid, but a more sophisticated understanding of the cell membrane is what? Understanding that it has other lipids like cholesterol, other proteins that maybe act as channels or enzymes. So when you look at something like this, it kind of looks like a puzzle. It has a lot of pieces. And so we call that the fluid mosaic model is a really good, sophisticated understanding of a membrane. Fluid mosaic. Fluid, why? Because of the phospholipid bilayer, but mosaic because of all these other components that can dissolve in the membrane to give the membrane a lot more function. All right, so that's the first organelle of the cell. So let's start looking at some of the others. All right, these right here that are bean-shaped, and you can even see some structure inside of it. That's a mitochondria. Mitochondria is plural, mitochondrion is singular. And what does this one look like right here? That looks like this one, right? So that's a mitochondrion. And the function of mitochondria is to produce ATP for the body. And ATP is the energy source. So mitochondria take up glucose and oxygen. So whenever you breathe, where does that oxygen go? Into these mitochondria right here, because they need it to take glucose and convert it into energy that the rest of the cell can utilize. And that energy source is called ATP or adenosine triphosphate. That's what keeps this cell alive. So guess what happens to this cell if these mitochondria stop making ATP? It dies. That's right. Those cells need to have ATP to stay alive. And these mitochondria need oxygen. That's why when you're choking and you can't breathe, you're going to die because these mitochondria stop making ATP. All right, to give you an idea of how important ATP is, okay, every once in a while, unfortunately, somebody's heart is going to stop beating. And so blood, which is carrying oxygen to the brain, okay, stops. So the brain runs out of oxygen. And in order for the brain to function to maintain consciousness, it needs ATP. If your heart stops, how long can you maintain consciousness? Does anybody have a good feeling for how important ATP is inside your brain? It's 2 seconds. After 2 seconds, your brain runs out of oxygen, can't make ATP, you lose consciousness as a result. That, to me, is a really short period of time, right? So your heart has got to be beating all the time. But that doesn't mean your brain is dead. It's going to die. How long can your brain survive without oxygen before it actually dies? It's 2 minutes. All right, so 2 seconds and you're unconscious, and 2 minutes, your brain dead. And when you're dead, what does that mean? Can't come back to life. That's a really terrible thing. Certain, like infants, are really good at coming back to life. We don't know, understand that process. We also have heard of some circumstances where people fall into a frozen lake, and they can be revived a half hour or later if they're frozen. But basically, an adult's brain is dead after just 2 minutes after their heart stops. So that's a really good idea for people to know CPR. Who's CPR certified in here? A lot of people. That means if you're CPR certified, it means that you can actually beat somebody's heart for them by doing chest compressions when they can't do it for themselves. And you can extend that period of time greatly. All right, so much more than 2 minutes. All right, so that's the function of these mitochondria right here. There are a number of these little spherical pockets inside the cell that are surrounded by membrane. We call these vesicles. All right, they can't make ATP because that's the job of mitochondria. These vesicles can have different functions. For instance, like this one right here, a lysosome has got digestive enzymes in it. So it's an intracellular digestive system. So it can break compounds down, can break big complicated compounds into smaller ones. Or if a bacteria finds its way inside the cell, it's going to infect the cell. Maybe the cell is smart enough to have it be surrounded by this lysosome, and then what happens to the bacteria? It gets broken down into building blocks that the cell can use for its own purposes. So a lysosome can be very protective. Or if a cell doesn't need this mitochondria anymore, then the lysosome can fuse around it and destroy that organelle as well. And then the building blocks of that organelle can be used to make other things that the cell needs. All right, so that's a lysosome. Here's another vesicle right here, and we see that it's filled up with something that we see being excreted from the cell or secreted from the cell. So this would be a secretory vesicle. Right, so these might be proteins or proteins that are modified with a sugar molecule. Right? Might be a glycoprotein being secreted from the cell. Okay. Let's see what else. I see some membrane systems. This right here is the nucleus. I'm going to talk about the nucleus in a little bit. Here's a system of membranes that's surrounding the nucleus, and you can see it has a bunch of little dots on it. And so it kind of gives you the impression that it's sandpaper. It's not a smooth surface. These membrane systems right here we call endoplasmic reticulum. And if it has those dots on it, we call it rough endoplasmic reticulum or rough ER. And the function of rough ER is to make proteins, protein synthesis. These little dots are what we call ribosomes. So in order for proteins to be made inside of a cell, they have to have an organelle called a ribosome. Ribosomes can be associated with endoplasmic reticulum, or they could be floating out inside the cytoplasm, either of those two locations. But in every case, what is this little dot going to do for our cells? Protein synthesis. Yep, protein synthesis. Okay. Here is some endoplasmic reticulum, and does it have ribosomes on it? Nope. So we call that smooth ER. Smooth ER is important for manufacturing, but can it make a protein? Why can't it make a protein? Doesn't have a ribosome. Okay. So the kinds of things that it makes are lipids or phospholipids. So lipid is a different kind of biological molecule compared to a protein. All right. So we got smooth ER, rough ER. Here we can see some microtubules that help determine the shape of the cell. And some of these might be intermediate filaments or microfilaments. But nonetheless, all of those filaments are organized by this structure right here. This is what we call the centrosome complex, and in the centrosome complex there are two centrioles that are actually made up of these filaments as well. All right, so the centrioles right here organize the cytoskeleton, organize the shape of the cell, but they can also act as a little monorail system for moving organelles around inside the cell. Who's ever been on a monorail? Probably a couple people, because where's the monorail? Not too far away. Disneyland, right? It's just a train that has one rail on it. So here is a microfilament right here that has just one rail. These organelles can hop a ride on it and can be transported from one part of the cell to the other. And that's organized by what system? The centrioles right here. Okay. All right, another organelle. Looks like a bunch of pancakes. And we can see it kind of curves around the nucleus on one side, and then on the other side it kind of curves away from the nucleus. This is the Golgi apparatus, or sometimes we call that the Golgi body. It can go by either name. I don't know what it's called on the test. It could be one of those or both of those. Okay, the Golgi apparatus right here, if you're going to think of just a couple key words, and you should always know at least a couple key terms or key words for all of these different things, like, for instance, mitochondria. What would be the key term there? ATP synthesis. For Golgi apparatus, it would be modification and packaging. So it's going to take proteins that are made by the... What makes a protein? Okay, in particular, the rough endoplasmic reticulum. It's going to take proteins made by rough endoplasmic reticulum, and you can see them right here in these terminal cisternae of the Golgi apparatus, and maybe modify it by adding a lipid or a sugar to it. It's going to convert a protein into a mucopolysaccharide. Muco kind of means proteinaceous in nature. All right, and a polysaccharide is a sugar, combining a protein with a sugar. And after it does it, it packages it into this vesicle right here, and that vesicle will be moved by the microtubules to the cell membrane, and that mucopolysaccharide is going to be secreted from the cell. So the Golgi apparatus is important for modification and packaging into secretory vesicles for exporting outside the cell. And a common term for mucopolysaccharide is mucus or moco. That's the stuff that comes out of your nose when you have a cold, okay? And that can help fight infections, that can help regulate pH, and it helps flush things out of your body. But it's also important for lubrication as well, okay? So this would be secretion. A good term for that process of secreting from inside the cell to outside the cell is called exocytosis. The reverse process of when things start on the outside of the cell and end up inside the cell would be called not exocytosis, but endocytosis. Endocytosis, going inside the cell. And we'll probably talk about some of those reverse processes in a little bit. Okay. All right, so the cytoskeleton is for motility and organizing the cell shape, mitochondria, ATP synthesis, Golgi, modification, packaging, rough ER for protein synthesis, smooth ER, lipid synthesis. Okay, so we got two different kinds of ribosomes. In every case, they're making a protein, but they're in two different locations. They're associated with different structures inside the cell. The proteins that are made by ribosomes on endoplasmic reticulum, making it rough, have a certain fate, have a certain destiny. Those proteins are destined to be secreted from the cell. So we call this the secretory pathway. Proteins that are made by these free ribosomes are not secreted. They stay inside the cell, right? They stay in the cytosol right here, do the job inside the cell. So a protein can have two different fates. It can either be secreted or it can stay inside the cell. Okay. There are some surface structures on the cell membrane, and this cell doesn't have all of them, but it has these things right here, microvilli. And there are some microfilaments that poke up inside these microvilli. These increase the surface area, makes the cell bigger without actually making the cell bigger for absorption. All right, so microvilli are important for absorption. There are some projections that come off the cell surface that might be about 10 times as large as a microvilli. Okay? And those things are what we call cilia. Cilia are loaded with microtubules on the inside, and cilia, when they're on the surfaces of a cell, they can beat, and they're all going to beat in a certain direction. All right, so cilia are important for motility, movement. Now, a particular cell won't be able to swim around its environment, but it can sweep things over the surface of an epithelium or a membrane. So the cells that line our air passageways have cilia, and they're sweeping all the time. Okay, guess which way they're sweeping? You think they're sweeping up or sweeping down? They're sweeping actually up. because our lungs are a dead-end sac, and if they're sweeping down, then all the dust that we breathe would end up in our lungs, and our lungs would fill up with junk. All right, so they're sweeping up, and then when all that junk gets into our mouth or oral cavity, what do? Oh, no, we just swallow it down. Okay, we don't spit it out. Unless we're what? Baseball player. Then we spit, right? Spit. Okay. Don't throw anything at me if you're a baseball player, because I can't get out of the way anymore. Okay, so microvilli for absorption, cilia for motility, and then there's another projection that's even 10 times longer than a cilium, and that's called a flagellum. And a flagellum is just like a big giant cilium, and human cells only have one, and there's only one kind of cell in our body that has it, and some of us have it, some of us don't. But the function, again, is motility, and that would be a sperm cell. Right? So males, when they produce sperm, have a special flagellum on it, which means that this sperm can swim around in an aqueous environment. Okay. So we talk about rough, smooth. So make sure if I missed any of these things, you can go back and at least know some key concepts and key terms of all these different organelles. So organelles are a building block of what? Organelle is a building block of a cell, and a cell is a building block of life, right? So I do want you to understand things in terms of building blocks. So next time we're going to start talking about the nucleus and nuclear structure. Oh, here's a little bit about ATP already. Okay, so there's availability in the lab at noon if somebody wants to come and do a lottery for that particular position. And everybody should know how to get into Blackboard right now. If you don't, you got to see me during office hours today or maybe during lab or something. Yeah. 335. Okay. So maybe see me right now if you can't get into Blackboard. Office hours, Monday, 3 to 4. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 till 3. But I might change it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.